today we take a look at a little piece of history with a personal connection, looking at ancestry, the past. Now, much has been written about Irish migration to the USA, Canada and Australia, but very little about the Irish, Fusiliers mainly, migration to India. So here to tell us more and about the documentary being made, Boys from Vepry, it's a real pleasure to welcome to the show from Zayed University, Associate Professor there, Ian Michael. Welcome to the show. Hello.
Hello, Susan. Thank you.
And thank you for bringing the story to us today.
My pleasure.
Alongside, who is directing the film and assistant professor at Zayed University, is Fakaya Akhtar. Welcome to you.
Thank you very much. And a very good morning to all the listeners of Dubai Eye.
Thank you so much. And yeah, this story really fascinated me. You contacted me via Professor James Pikeaway, who of course presents Nightline here at Dubai Eye. So let's start with the story, Ian, because you've got a personal connection to this. So tell us why you wanted to make this documentary.
Well, Susan, growing up in India, I was born into what we call an Anglo-Indian family. That's our community culture. So always growing up in India, we used to ask questions to our grandparents, great-grandparents, who had very different surnames in India. So my granddad's name was a footman, and my grandmom's name was a Curran, Joyce Curran, extremely Irish. So we kept asking these questions when we were kids, where is your granddad from? And so we just forgotten about that. And I've been living in Dubai since 2004, went back to India in 2005. My grandmom expired then, and one of my granduncle handed over a huge set of files with all these army records of this ancestor of mine, John Footman. And I just began reading it, got fascinated, and thought, a man in 1847 left the coast of South Cork and set sail to India during the peak of the Great Famine. And he joined as an Irish Fusilier, and it fascinated me, where people can come from. And so I took the journey from there. And since then, I kept going back and forth to Clonakilty in southwest Cork and getting more stuff from the parish and the baptismal records. And that began the journey of discovering who my ancestors are.
When you were a child, figuring out your names and thinking, hang on, how come, and where does this fit? Were you given answers then as a child from the family? Did they know?
Yes, my great-grandmom, her name was Agnes Footman, and she, I was fortunate, or most of her great-grandkids were fortunate to see her, because she lived past 82. And we used to ask her, because she was born in Vepry, and so we called the documentary Boys from Vepry. And we would ask her, how was it growing up over there? So she was the one who saw her grandfather. He was John Footman, who migrated. So she had the privilege, one would say, of seeing him. And she would talk about life as, those days, a second generation Irish lady. And, the stories were fascinating, because the sort of Irish culture was still embedded, I guess, up to my great-grandmom. It was not so mixed, I would say. But she would talk about those days of the Irish dances, the Irish folklore that happened in India. And, yeah, we did ask the questions. But I guess after you pass your, 12, 13, 14, you get into life, and then all this gets forgotten until something sparks it once again.
Fakaya, how did you get involved? You're directing the film, so tell me how that conversation began.
I think it was a sweet coincidence, I should say. I didn't know, though Ian was in Zayed for long, and I joined in 2013, but we never met before, so it just happened one morning that he was in one of my colleagues' office. And he was just generally talking about this, the research that he's doing, and I was listening. He was actually explaining this to somebody else, and I was just standing there, and suddenly it caught my attention, and I was like, okay, fine, I want to know a little bit more about it. And then he told me that this is what he's doing, and this is what his family and all that. I don't know. I mean, I still cannot figure out why I just said this to him. I said, but this is a very good documentary material. He said, yeah, right? I said, yeah, it is. And he said, how? I said, yeah, because you have done so much of research and you, it's your family, you know a lot about it, the connection, and you know, you know the people since you have done extensive research. I think it can make a good documentary. And he said, who will do it? I said, yeah, I'll do it. He said, yeah. I said, yeah. And then that's how the journey began, actually. And I was not sure, he was not sure. We just went ahead and we said, okay, we're going to give this proposal to the Zayed University, because Zayed University is very generous to give. You know, they have different projects. This one is called Research Incentive Fund. We call it RIF. So we got this RIF fund, and we gave the proposal, we give all the explanations and everything, the budget and everything, and it got through, surprisingly. But we had done our homework right, and it got through, and we got the funding that we wanted for the film. But documentaries are difficult when you don't have enough money.
And it's a timely process, isn't it? And
yes.
You've been shooting and you're midway through the process, planning to reach completion in 2017, the end of 2017. Just to give you an idea of the commitment and what it takes to create a documentary like this. Telling stories, telling the story through history. Talking today, and with a particular time in history, with guests from Zayed University, and that's Ian Michael, who's Associate Professor at Zayed University, College of Business and teaching marketing. And it's his story, really, going back. He's the seventh generation of this of the Fusiliers that went to India from Ireland. The Boys from Vepri is the name of the documentary being made. He's writing it, he's researching it, he's sharing his knowledge from his family and finding out more along the way. And with him, directing the film, Assistant Professor at Zayed University in the College of Communication and Media Sciences. It's a real pleasure to welcome Fakir Akhtar to the show. Now, Fakir, you've worked a lot in media, making documentaries. You made the documentary Children of God about special needs children here in Dubai. That was in 2011. Also, All Alone and Lonely, a documentary on the widows and orphans of Kashmir. So you overheard Ian talking about his story and this time in history, and stepped up and said, this would make a great documentary. So let's start with that piece and time in history, Ian. There in the 1840s, 50s. So what was life like? It's the famine, it's Ireland. What's happening?
Yes, Susan, when we went to do our research, I made many visits to South Cork. I discovered that South Cork was very affected by the famine, the 1840s to 50s. And during subsequent visits, and this time when we went to film over there, it was a terrible time in Irish history. Approximately 25% of Irish families, Irish men and women, left the country. Many died of starvation, millions died of starvation. And I think our research showed that almost about 25 to 30% of Irish people died during the famine. Most of the what makes the story very interesting is most of the Irish men and women who left Ireland during that time set sail to the US, Canada, and a few even to Australia, and that has been documented quite a bit in popular research and feature films and documentaries. Little or nothing has been documented about some of the Irish men and women, mainly men, who set sail to India. And one such man is my ancestor, John Footman. We discovered where his family came from. It comes from a small little village called Dundeedy, which is on the seacoast of Clonakilty, southwest Cork. We discovered his family used to be horsemen and labourers in the royal or the castle over there, Castle Frick. We interviewed Stephen Frick, who's now the present generation. And so we discovered that life was terrible, as one would say. When we're talking to people, they said families felt so bad that they were losing their family members. They felt embarrassed that sometimes they would even bury the dead, you know, at wee hours of the night or morning, because they never wanted to show neighbors and friends that people have died. And so it was mass starvation, lots of deprivation of food. And so it must have been a terrible time in Irish history then, from what one would say. One would say, yeah.
Have you come across why India at that time? I mean, obviously you've got the empires happening and there's a lot of controversy around that and history to tell. But this is just after independence, isn't it? When India's got independence, is that right?
No, his migration took place when the British were still ruling India. It was 1847. I got his baptism record, which showed he was 21 years when he left. When we asked locals over there why would he have done this, they said probably it would have been a more secure life. So there were lots of people dying on the way to the US, the famous coffin ships. So they said he would have thought it was a much more secure life. He would have definitely have had a contract to work in what used to be the British East India Company then. So we traced that he left Southampton or somewhere around that coast and sailed for about 3 to 4 months to India with a secure job joining the British East India Company as an Irish fuseler. We also found out that on that one ship, it was called the Kent, there were 218 other people sailing with him, almost 80% men, young men, so from different parts of Ireland and also some from the UK. So we would imagine that most of them were bachelors, not many women, coming to join the British East India Company, then coming to the city of Madras. So that's fairly well researched. So
well researched, and was it easy to access the information?
The easy thing about the information was the baptismal records. So it all started, like I said, it all started with me getting his baptism, which was in the file that my great-grandmother gave me, handed down to my grandmother. And so that was easy to get, and that began the journey. Subsequently, I got the baptism of all his siblings. He was, from what I could get, we hired local historians and genealogists. The genealogists think that, he comes from a family of seven. They think two of his last brothers may have migrated to the US after the famine, not during. And the only two members who they found stayed back in Ireland was his eldest brother Michael Footman, and they showed around. He owned a shop over there in Dundee, close to Clonakilty. So he was the only one in the family of seven who migrated to India.
I was just listening to him, and I just wanted to make this point that I must say that Ian is a very good researcher, and the whole idea of doing this film actually emerged from the fact that there was a huge research behind this project. Normally when I do a film and I think of doing a documentary, I have to do, start from a scratch and do the research myself and then start writing the script. But in this case, I'm not doing any of that because Ian is a very good researcher, and he also understands the demand of a documentary film. He kind of understands the visual, how one can, go into the visual journey.
And I suppose one of the challenges is when you have researched something so well, you then have an enormous amount of material. So then what goes into the final cut when putting the story together through film, through documentary? So we'll find out more about the story when we come back, some of the challenges and some of the lessons learned, really, because often by looking back in history, we can learn from what's happened and gone before. But I'd love to hear as well some of the surprises along the way, maybe some of the stories or some of the people that you've connected with, and this term Anglo-Indian and what that means to you. Taking a look at history, what's your favourite time in history? What's the area that interests you the most, and is there a connection? Why? Let me know on 4001 or via our Messenger app. People texting in, one here, the fall of communism in Eastern Europe, so 1989. That's from Lydia. Also from Shazine, saying Islamic history, as it really brings to mind the realities of the region where we live, also opens the doorway to see the development of the region too. So what's your favourite time in history? Let me know. Another one here, the age of discovery. This is from Veena, and fascinated by this, Veena, actually. So you're looking at the period in history, the 15th century to the 18th century, when a lot of exploration, overseas travel emerged. It was a powerful factor in European culture and globalization. So yeah, it's there's a romanticism, there's politics, there's social engagement, but there's lots of education and lessons, culture, to be learned by looking at history. So bringing a story to the table today from Zayed University, it's a real pleasure, looking at this time in history. Boys from Vepry is the name of the documentary, and it's about the journey of the Irish famine migrants who sailed to India right at the the peak of the famine in the 1840s and 50s. With a personal connection to this story is Ian Michael, who's Associate Professor at Zayed University College of Business, teaching marketing, and Fakia Akhtar, who has made films, worked in media, TV, radio, and she's Assistant Professor at Zayed University at the College of Communication and Media Sciences, and she's directing the documentary. So, as it is at the moment, and this has been a year in the making, you've been to Ireland, you've been to India, and you're planning to go to Australia as well. So we'll find out why that is in a moment. But I wanted to just understand better the term, when you said before Anglo-Irish, and this was the term used in the community in India. What does it mean? Where does that come from?
Yes, Susan. The term the British gave this race that they sort of created in India was Anglo-Indians. So it's as if I could use the word. We used to be while we were growing up, sort of half community or half caste people marrying between the British, Scottish, sometimes even the Portuguese. I mean, I've known people from, my wife is Goan, Portuguese ancestry. So sometimes they would also call themselves, but it's pretty much the British, Scottish and Irish who married Indian women or women marrying men. So that was the term given on our birth certificates also, because sometimes I used to take out my birth certificate and it was given, what's your nationality? It used to be there as Anglo-Indian. So that was the term given to us. It was mixed race. One of our ancestor, dad or mum's side, would come from Ireland, Scotland or the UK. And we were different. We were the more liberal people in India. We were the people who had all the parties, the Christmas dances. In fact, I used to live in Hyderabad, and there was a suburb called Lala Guda in Hyderabad, and we used to call it Little England. And so they used to ask us playfully, where do you come from? So we used to say Little England. So that was, the clothes were different, the Christmas, New Year, everything was different over there. So that's how we grew up in India as Anglo-Indians. A few places that wherever the army was, because most of these people used to be army men and women, wherever there was army, wherever there were railways, they were very big onto railways because they were some of the first people who built the railways under the British supervision. So Anglo-Indians have made a big mark on railways, military, and even the Air Force in India.
And Fakir, from India as well, were you familiar with that term?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Anglo-Indians, yes, of course. I think Anglo-Indians are in every part of India. I come from Kashmir, and they are in Kashmir as well. And as Ian said, yes, we can identify them as, party people, very fancy, sometimes free foot loose, and that kind of thing. Phrases also used to go, because India, obviously, if you talk about 30 years or 40 years ago, or even, earlier than that, India is not so, it's a more like a, family enclosed they have close ties and they don't party much, especially at that time. So if you had an Indian, Anglo-Indian friend, it was like, a total no-no from your family that don't, you should not be friends with the Anglo-Indians because they are, very, very, I mean, for them, it was like, it could be something like, it will be a bad it's something which will not be good for you. And at that time also, because we had very good friends who were from Anglo-Indians from the south of India. I remember I had a friend, and I really used to like her, and but I would ask this question, actually I would ask this question, why they are different, why they are called Anglo-Indian. It was like Anglo-Indians was a term which was not Indian, which was not, where do they come from. I also remember one film, Bollywood film, which was called Julie. The name of the film was Julie, and there they showed the Anglo-Indian family, and where the story goes like this. And that's actually when I came to know that this is what Anglo-Indians is all about. And I also come from a school which was actually started by an Irish, and I think education and many things have come from there. And But yeah, I mean, whatever said and done, we were all, India is a very, it's a big country, and people from different parts have settled there, and everything is like acceptable. And
so what's interesting about this as well is that when I think of migration of that era, you know, the 1800s, you will think of the Irish, you'll think of Scottish, the diaspora that would be around the world, but you would be looking at places like Australia, Canada, America, the USA, where people went to. It was not so obvious to me to think of India, and that's why this story is so interesting. So do you have an idea of population of that time, the migrants going to India? Because is that one of the reasons why their story hasn't been told before? Was it less people? I mean, compared to the migrants to Australia or Canada or the USA?
I think the greatest time that India had a population of what we can term as Anglo-Indians was just around the pre-independence time in the 40s. They were close to about 500,000 to nothing more than, I would say, 1 million who could call themselves Anglo-Indians. These days, because of more and more mixed marriages and races, most of the Anglo-Indians have migrated, moved on, because around the 1947s, in my family also, my grandmom was the only one who stayed back in India. Her 9 brothers and sisters were given British passports. You could make a choice if you want to go back to the UK or Ireland if your grandfather was from there. And most of them subsequently moved on to Australia, and that's why we're moving the journey on to Australia. But having said that, very quickly, they've made some major contributions in India. My research just recently, I knew this, but just recently reinforced this, that in 1920s and 30s, especially in hockey, 10 of the team members in the 20s and 30s and 40s were Anglo-Indians who played hockey. And I understand from my research that the UK didn't field a team for almost 3 Olympics because of Anglo-Indians were playing for India.
How interesting.
Yes.
Yes, and that particular sport as well. I'm fascinated by that. The things that we carry forward with us and the things that get left behind due to migration. What have you seen in your family? Because, you know, 7th generation from John Footman, your relative, who migrated to India at that time. I wonder, you know, down the generations, what part of Ireland is still with you in your family in some way, or has it completely got lost along the way?
But people ask me about my mum, and did she ever, and people see my mum and they say, oh, she dresses this way, because when I talk to my mum and see her, and we never used to take notice of it in India, but now when I talk about it, she's never ever worn an Indian dress in her life. She's just dressed, so she never ever wore a sari or whatever. She just wore the same, even my grandma.
That's very interesting, you know. Even though they are married into Indians and they still wear skirts, and which is very alien to Indians, you know, at that time. Also 20 years back, they never used to wear. Now, of course, things have changed. But it's very interesting, you know. And when we were doing the shooting, and we met a lot of Irish and also, you know, other from UK, they all still say that India is the country they would love to live in. But somewhere, you know, they also feel that they were not accepted in India. Though they love the country, but still they were never accepted there. And that's why they are again migrating back to different parts of the world. And, you know, that's how Australia came in, as many people, the Footmans have also migrated to Australia. So somewhere down, you know, through this film, I think there are many things one can establish. One is the human, you know, the struggle for survival. And the migration which took place up to 2 centuries ago, we still are in the same, we still have the same problems. We still have, though we are much more civilized technology-wise and education-wise and everything, but we still the same. It's still happening. And whether it is because of your choice, you want to migrate to a different for greener pastures, or it is by, you know, by some kind of, you know, like, you know, calamity, natural calamity or war or any kind of situation. So doing this film again is a challenge for me. And why I chose this to be a film, because you look, for you a film is a film, and but when a film tells you more than, you know, what you, this is one film which can talk about many things, and yet it has a core which is, I think, everybody will be able to relate to. And and the journey itself is beautiful, and because we are going from one place to the other, we are meeting different people, we are getting a lot of good experience, and also the kind of things that we have come to know through different people, and also the, you know, the in-depth information that I never thought I would get, and also the kind of locations that we went. I never knew that I would be able to see the house where the John Footman lived. But we were able to do that. We were able to go and shoot there. And also, I was also in India, back in India. We met a couple of women who are very old, in their 90s. And one Irish lady, we took her interview and how she feels. And I told her, I said, have you ever, you know, felt like going back to Ireland? Or she said, no, why? I mean, this is my home. And she's, the way she's made her home, you know, it's so different from Indian household. Indian families and Indian houses look different when you go there, and the furniture, the things. But when I went into her house, it was totally different, you know. It had that English feel to it, you know.
Irish feel,
yeah,
to it. We better
Irish
get it right.
English, yeah.
Oh, no, there's a difference.
Irish feel to it.
To all,
yes,
our Irish friends in the UAE.
Yeah.
And I know you've connected with the Irish community here in the UAE in support of making this documentary. So more to come on the story, The Boys from Veppery. So stay with us.
Live update from the Mon Healthy Communities. There has never been a better time to address health concerns.
So we're heading to the capital for Demand Creating Healthy Communities conference. We've got Tom Urquhart on the line. How's it going, Tom?
It's going all right, Suzanne. Yeah, I'm just down here in the main hall. Currently up on stage, we've got Matt Dyke. Now, Matt is a digital planner. He's a man with a lateral thinker, if you like, with over 15 years' experience in digital consumer brand and communications planning. He's basically talking about how we use the digital revolution at the moment to affect change in our lifestyles, making a healthier lifestyle, because that is the core to the conversations here, how to benefit our community and society, how to affect change, and how to use health, wealth and fitness as a vehicle, if you like, for that change. All the speakers speaking about that from their own different perspectives. And just a few moments ago, we had Mick Cornett come off the main stage. He's the man, of course, who put famously Oklahoma City on a diet, and they lost £1 million. So we've had him. Now I've got Matt Dyke, and I've got plenty more speakers to look forward to throughout the day.
Sounds fantastic, Tom. It's a really good initiative from Demand Creating Healthy Communities. It's the conference there in Abu Dhabi. We'll be hearing more from Tom Urquhart throughout the day. And yeah, get back in there, Tom.
Thanks so much indeed.
Yeah, we'll speak to Tom later on. And yeah, it's really interesting. And yeah, the mayor of Oklahoma, what an amazing guy, what he did for that city. If you are looking to get active, get outdoors, maybe to breathe, smile, connect and be active, then why not join me on my wellness walks? Another one this evening. I'm doing this in conjunction with Golf for Good. So giving back to the community, getting fit and healthy, but also just hanging out with people and just walking as a group, the benefits to that. I give you this quote from John Muir, who wrote John of the Mountains, the unpublished journals of John Muir. I only went out for a walk and finally concluded to stay out till sundown, for going out, I found, was really going inwards. So yeah, if you'd like to join me this evening, all you need to do is SMS wellness to 4001 with your name. I'm going to be heading out on the beach road at 8 o'clock tonight. So if you're available and you fancy joining the group, do text us or go to the website on the homepage at dubaii1038.com. You'll find out information, how to register, how to email me directly, and to find out more of what Golf for Good do and their challenges coming up later this year and into 2017. team. Now, we've been talking today about history, this particular time in history, with Ian Michael, Associate Professor at Zayed University, alongside the lady that is directing the documentary, Fakir Akhtar. And just to get a little bit more before we wrap up this hour, you are midway through making the documentary. You've been filming in Ireland and in India. You're going to be heading to Australia to continue the story. And it is such a fascinating story of this time, you know, the 1840s, famine in Ireland, people migrated. We think of Australia, USA, Canada, but actually there was this community that grew in India that came to known as Anglo-Indians. So for you as the director making the film, Fakir, how easy or how much has how have you gone around keeping the story true and real, but in the time you have to tell the story through film?
Yes, it is a challenge because it's a very big story, big canvas, and the story has many different, you know, it's bifurcating into different routes. So shooting at different places and then finally coming up with the entire footage and then putting it onto the editing table, I think it's going to be a very, very challenging thing, because this story is not, it's not a current story. It's an old story where I had to, in fact, you know, recreate certain places, like, for instance, the birth of John Footman and how, where does he come from and all that. So we did a little bit of fiction piece there, because I felt that, you know, we have to do that. We have to create some recreate some of the scenes. So we did that. And I think editing is going to be very, very challenging, because putting everything together, you know, and also constructing the story, and also the fact that I have kept my direction. I know I'm not forming certain things in front of me. I'm just going with the tide, and I'm also trying to be as real as possible, because I don't want to make a documentary which is, of course, you know, I'm giving some form to it. It already has a form. So I'm just going by that.
There's such a lot of research that's gone into this, and some of it's been very accessible, some of it's not been so. But part of this, obviously, as people delve into their ancestry or into any time in history, there's got to be some surprises along the way. So tell us about a revelation, Ian, or something that has really caught your attention with this story.
Yes, Susan. I think the biggest revelation I got, and it sort of reinforced it when we went back, is John Footman's mum's maiden name was Joan Collins. And so Michael Collins, the great Republican hero who got freedom for the Republic, fought for the Republic, was born and raised probably about a kilometer away from the village where Joan comes from. So that got me thinking, and we know it's the Collins clan. We could say that for sure, that they belong to the Collins clan. But now people on the ground over there who are doing genealogy and our historians are trying to see if there's a connection by blood, if Joan Footman, also known as Joan Collins, is actually related to Michael Collins. So I think that would be quite amazing if we can tie that knot together. So one of Michael Collins' direct relative actually came to India and started the Footman family. That was one. And a couple of two quick ones. We also discovered that Joanna Hickey, the great-grandmom of John F. Kennedy, lived around the same village. And Henry Ford's grandfather comes from the Clonakilty area also. So, small little village.
Yeah,
and
yeah, and I want to add, you know, when he found these things, he started behaving like a royalty.
Really? Well, it's a fascinating story, and we wish you all the very best. Come back and tell us more as you head to Australia to continue, I won't say complete the story, because I think you're going to find more as you make the documentary. It's really great talking to you. The documentary is called Boys from Veppery. We'll be following the story, and it's been a real pleasure talking with Ian Michael and Fakir Akhtar. And as I said, we wish you all the very best, and send our best to everyone at the Zayed University.
Thank you so much. Thank you.